Thank you everyone for coming. Nice to see Krishna here and Yashoda, son of Sridharupa and daughter coming along. You all know them probably, but just to give you a little bio about them. Swami Ramdas. He was born in 1951, Rose Point. He received an essay, Who is Krishna? And Krishna, the Reservoir Pleasure, in December of 1969, and then he joined the Nipur Temple of that same month on the 30th. He took first initiation in June of 1970 with Shri Prabhupada, and then a second initiation with Shri Prabhupada in July of 1975. He was the Sankirtan leader in his first month. He led a traveling Sankirtan bus party for 2 years. Then he was the temple president in Baltimore, and then down to Miami, and then over to Prabhupada. He traveled to Srila Prabhupada most in 1977, and he served as his nurse for 4 months while he was there. And this is our beloved Vasisthir, Srila Rupa. And she began going to the temple in Miami when she was just 15 years old. She joined the Kelly Harris 3 years later in 1973. She became one of Srila Prabhupada's personal cooks in the summer of 1975 in Bengali, and she continued that service while Srila Prabhupada was in India until 1977. She traveled with Srila Prabhupada throughout India, even in Himalaya, speaking engagement, like vendors, homes, and was studying cooking from Srila Prabhupada's sister Kishima while she was living in Calcutta. She has continued her studies in cooking while living in India with many chefs, the life vendors' home, the temple, cooks, street vendors. Cooking has been a lifelong passion, and she worked with Luna Devi as a test cook on the cookbook for Krishna's cuisine. She studies continually today, and she teaches here in Alaska, and she likes to share her Prabhupada's stories with a unique and personal style. She also has numerous and unique exchanges with Srila Prabhupada to reveal a side of him that is often missed. So we thank him for coming.
So I'm very grateful for the opportunity to speak something about this most amazing and important personality, Sivani Grace Srila Prabhupada, who had such a important, valuable, and overwhelming influence on my life, and obviously on all of yours in various ways, all of them greatly beneficial, I'm sure. And I'm also very honored to share the daya, so to speak, with Srila Prabhu, who has a remarkable history in Krishna consciousness and in life, which I have been honored to observe and question. And I thought that to provide a, if you will, a skeleton for this talk, the talk itself would be according to our inspiration and these thoughts come to us, to give it some framework. But I used my diary, which this diary began in 1976 in Calcutta. And those are the times that, well, actually, even earlier, Srila Prabhupada was staying there. We were, I was the Calcutta president, and I was in service there from 75. And 76. which afforded us a great privilege because Srila Prabhupada spent a lot of time in the Prabhupada temple in transit between Mayapur and other places during that time. And actually, that was the reason that I had designed this temple version for Miami, because I felt although it was going on very successfully, that was more due to the efforts of the devotees like Sukhadev and Kantaka Gopal and other great distributors who were there. I mentioned Kumar Hari and Raghavan Tagore and many things. I really felt that I had not joined the movement to be a temple president or to be successful in the institution, none of that. And it appealed to me. I really just saw this glowing personality who I had been so drawn to since before I met him. I really was seeking him, looking for him, and somehow I didn't see that he was there. Fortunately, he was there. And so I felt all of this management and all of the little being a temple president kept me away from him. And he's wandering around in India doing all these wonderful things. So I resigned and decided to go to India. That was in 75. So at Mayapur Festival in 75, we landed up in India with no idea what we were there to do. We just wanted to be close to Srila Prabhupada and travel about wherever he was, which of course, who could think of a more sublime activity. But very quickly, I was tricked by Garga Muni Prabhu, who was the most fortunate thing that he tricked me. I had no intention of taking that position again. But hearing that I was there, and his close friend, Sannyasi Sridhar Swami, who's now left us, was the temple president of Prabhupada, and was very eager to get out and take sannyas. Get on the road again. So Garga Muni, without my knowledge, went up to Prabhupada's room and he said, "Srila Prabhupada, Bhavi Ram is here. He's looking for service in India. We need a new temple president in Calcutta." Prabhupada simply said, "He didn't." And then Garga Muni came running downstairs and said, "Bhavi Ram, Srila Prabhupada wants you to be temple president in Calcutta." So, 4 or 5 hours later, I found myself in the Calcutta temple. He raced me down to the Albert Road temple from Mayapur. And within an hour, I was sitting with all the bank statements with my signature on it, making me a proper signer on the account, a ring of skeleton keys, basically my first real time in India. And Garga Muni and Sridhar Swami at the door, leaving with a kind of a gesture cap smile on their face as they scurried out the door. So what appeared to be a sort of Shanghai became the greatest blessing because, in fact, Prabhupada was there so much that both Sridhar and I got a tremendous amount of interaction with him, which was our desire. I just wanted to look after her. And using the temple president card and privilege, we actually traveled a lot with him, even before we were officially part of his party. And very quickly, Shabura became trained as a cook, and then at various times was his official cook. You all probably know. Reveal some of the experiences tonight. So there are many, many things that happen, memories that we have. Each one of them we can unpack 100 times. That I mean, literally, that's not a figure of speech. We actually do unpack these memories, each one of them 100 times. And each time they reveal another aspect of a person. In person Bhava, what it means to be person Bhava. The main using humanness in it with the divine radiance. I don't know how to explain it. It's not that he was some kind of robotic, you know, machine that sat on the Vyasa song and just repeated Bhagavatam. But he lived it naturally and very personally. His own personality was infused thoroughly in everything he did. There was no sublimation of who he was as an individual. That it was radiant with this consciousness that was otherworldly. So, how do we understand that? You know, it's a lifelong quest, and perhaps many lifelong quests. But we work together as we can. Tonight is that also trying to work together to explore and unpack some of these aspects. Hopefully get some insight. So for the moment, I thought I would begin in January of 1977. I'll give a little bit of context to that. Srila Prabhupada began to show ill health in the later part of 76. Of course, there were various times. His body was quite old, and he used it very vigorously, very little sleep, and huge amount of travel. But by late 76, the aging was showing. He had already had numerous strokes in the bone marrow and pushed on. Numerous times, by medical standards, there's a good chance it should have just ended right there physically, but somehow this desire for John kept him going. Sri Rupa and I traveled to the Kumbh Mela, which is the largest gathering of any sort. It is also, of course, the largest spiritually oriented or religious gathering, but of any gathering, Kumbh Mela is the largest gathering of human beings. And it runs into millions and millions of people, all in one place, all for one purpose. It's quite a profound experience. Although they come from various disciplines, and be under the banner of Sanatana Dharma, but a whole array of different disciplines and different perspectives, but all of them seeking spiritual enlightenment. And when we arrived, this was just before mid-January, 12th of January. Actually, we arrived on the 11th, and Srila Prabhupada arrived on the 12th. It was just astonishing to see when we came to the riverbank. But literally, as far as the eye could see, was an ocean of people. And that riverbank was open. It wasn't blocked by trees or, you know, any obstacles. It was open. And on both sides of the river, those who could bend a lot about it, seeing the Ganges and the rivers that converge here, you know how big that riverbank is. It's a large beach. Runs probably a mile on the one side, the Allahabad city side, and maybe half a mile on the opposite end. It's a very big beach. So much so that millions of people can camp on this beach at once, and they do. So this Kumbh Mela was supposed to be a Mahakumbh, which means every 112 years. Of course, now here with many kumbhs are called Mahakumbhs, but we were assured by Srila Prabhupada this was a Mahakumbh. And it's a very auspicious time. There's a certain moment when it's very, very auspicious day that we're poem addressing all these stories and all the reasons. Trying to stick to my core subject, Srila Prabhupada's personality. So I'm just setting the stage here. Srila Prabhupada and I were obviously very young at that time, in the early 20s. And we had each come from different directions. Myself, a decidedly middle-class family in the suburbs of Michigan, Detroit area. We were working in a seemingly intellectual, wealthy family. Both of us shared a common objective, and we now found ourselves in many, many stories and adventures on standing on the riverbank in Alaba, the Dakota Mainland in 1977. Srila Prabhupada now arrives on the 12th of January, and came to our camp, in the camp at ISKCON, the Lord's Sabbath. Srila Prabhupada prepares breakfast, and I serve it to him, and he asks, by the way, where is your wife? I said, well, she's cooked this for you, and Srila Prabhupada said she's a very expert cook. So, from that time on in the Kumbh Mela, Srila Prabhupada and Kumbh Mela cooked for Srila Prabhupada. And I'd just like to pause right here and ask Srila to reflect on that time of cooking for Srila Prabhupada, and when she feels set enough, I'll take the story of the poem.
Actually, I had no idea where this was going or how we were going to do, but I came with many notes. I'm taking a week from the middle of what you kind of said. But to give you a little bit from where I'm coming from, Prabhupada, this person, speaking of this person, Prabhupada charmed his survivors first. The way he cared for us and the way he cared for the society. That's what made so many people give up their lives and never even saw him, met him, and today, when many of you are here, and still people are totally devoted. And I'm here all the time for the next generation, you know, you all sacrificed so much. How do we do that? We don't have that. How do we get that feeling of sacrifice to anything? And so I heard it, I was kind of dumbfounded, and I looked. And I didn't feel that you were sacrificing. And did you feel that super? I mean, you were out every day there at the airport, and I mean, it was joyful. It was, so my only response, I mean, I look back now, I'm going to go, okay, yeah, we did, we gave up family, we gave up education, we gave up wealth. You know, living on the floor, we gave up. Those things weren't in our minds. It's not what we were thinking or right out of yourself. But we all just fell in love. We fell in love with Prabhupada. And that carried us. And so, Prabhupada was the example. He taught by the way he lived. And it was his person that captured our hearts, and he was the theory, the practice, and the heart. And that's a thing there, I mean, my God. How much did we collect when we traveled the world, the country? Everybody's, I think one day we should write a book on how everybody joined. Because everybody comes in a different way with a unique perspective, but somewhere that you can see the magic. And I know once Tamal Krishnamar was lamenting for all that about his previous life and saying, you know, he was falling, he was thinking this and that and the other, and probably said, yes. So he said, but when I called, he came. So you see how so many come, you get to go. My story seemed a little bit quirky. I come from South Florida, and I was picking mangoes, and I know going to go to the temple, knock on the door, and I'm getting there, and the lady takes my mangoes and hands me a book tomorrow. What just happened? She stole my mangoes. You know, so that's another story, but just give me a little context. I do have a tendency to be very loud, and I go,
I do always circle back. But I have to contact the vehicle stores about that. Back to the Kumbh Mela, a little bit of the setting of that. So we were on the river banks, and we had a tent, and Robert was very unhappy where we were because we were so far away from from all the activity. But so where my kitchen was, believe it or not, where we were cooking was, we were literally in the sand. We had a pipe that went down into the river, and that's how we got our water. And we had this aluminum corrugated that marked off our boundary. We had 2 mud piles on the stove. We cooked with wood. We were out to the open air and the sky and the wind and the sand. And right, so say this was my sink. There would be the 2 stoves. And then right here is where Robert would shower. And so there was a corrugated aluminum that went up. And in a few well they ground, when Robert was in the shower, I was always right there to see watching. And I could see his legs from the back down. I don't know if I should go a little more on that. But. So, for a few days, I mean, you all know my story, so that's why I don't think I was there. And here it goes. But on this one particular day, it happened to be the day that everybody was supposed to be. And I was always of the type, I like austerity, I like fasting, I like, that type of lifestyle. I'm very drawn towards that. And so, and I was always drawn towards doing the right thing and being poor and mukti and, I was always living happy and being happy to this. The last day, it was the day that everybody should be in the water at, I think it was 11:20. Something like that. And so all the devotees left except Prabhupada's servants. Arisari stayed back, I stayed back, we stayed back. And everybody else left. And so it just so happened I thought I would be at that sink at that time. I would put my head under the water because I wanted to be in the water. That was all mental. And then for days, Prabhupada was coming to go into the shower. And every day when I'm there washing, I'm watching him in there. And when he would go in, he'd take off his shoes, and he would open the door and he'd walk in. But when he walked in, the shoes were facing opposite of him, and then he would come out. So for about 3 days, out of the corner of my eye, I would see his foot do this, and he would turn the shoe around to open the door, step into it, and walk out. I tried to get courage for 1 or 2 days. So here was the day, and I'm thinking, I'm going to do it. So I'm there at that exact time, waiting and putting my head under the water, and then Prabhupada goes in, he just comes from his massage. So he came out from his gumption, body glistening, oil, and he opened the door. And we walked in to the shower, and then I was waiting for that foot. So I'm there really nervous, actually. And then all of a sudden, I see the foot come out. And I go, oh, sure, Prabhupada, I'll do it. And I hear you go, So in my silliness, so I get down on the ground, and so I take his shoes, and so I turn them, thinking they're the right, feet. And then his foot goes, and I realize, So I immediately took the shoe and turned it. And as I was turning it, he was already in motion. He was in motion, and he was moving. And so when I turned like that, he stood on my hand and jumped on the ground. And he had me pinned to the ground. I stayed like this. And usually check somebody, you jump back because he didn't move. He stayed. Not only stayed, he put all his weight. I'm down like this on the ground, and Prabhupada literally by eternity was slow motion. And he, so his foot was on my arm, so he leaned all his weight on that foot. He took his other foot like this, and he took the shoe and he brought it over here. He turned it around, all the while I'm down on the ground, not moving, and I'm looking up. And he turned it around, fitted it to his foot, and then shifted like this, and then turned it around. And he opened the door and just walked out. Didn't say a word. Didn't say a word. And I'm down on the ground, and I'm thinking, oh my God. And the fleet came running, and she grabbed my arm, and she had my arm on her head. Like this. And then I sat there completely dumbfounded. And I thought to myself, such a nonsense. You wanted to be in the river, you wanted to have mercy, and now I actually got the most mercy of anyone here. Robert stepped on me today. Here I was, thinking I wanted to show if I were really wrong, and so on. So I put it in perspective of the nonsense that I am, and that. And you heard me in my offering last year where I said, I should have, why didn't I know the day you stepped on the approval that you removed all the auspiciousness from my life? So, you know, that's a little bit of the promilla. I don't know if you're going to continue, but I'm probably unhappy and then what we end up doing.
I'm pretty sick. So, Judy Perlow mentioned the day when all the devotees went down from the bath. That was January 14th, in referring to Madhuri. And as Judy Rupa was so dedicated and so eager to have the blessings of this amazing personality of Srila Prabhupada, so he was surrounded by hundreds of disciples who had similarly great dedication and eagerness to please him. So I noted here that on 14th January, the Sangha, she was correct, it was 11 a.m. in the morning, the auspicious moment. And with Jagataka Swami, Guru Kripa Swami, Hansaguru Swami, Gurudev Swami, Nanda Kumara Swami, Bhavananda Swami, Pratita Bhavana, Pratita, Pritha, 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 Pritha Swami, Achyutananda Swami, etc., and also myself. We started for the bay. Now, in the room, when you have millions of people, it is out of the question that all of them can bathe at 11 o'clock. In fact, there is a very traditional and rigidly observed hierarchy of who can bathe when. And the first that bathe are the Nagabhavas. And they come down from the Himalayas with their tridents and their dreadlocks dragging on the ground. And many of them are totally naked, and they have a little silver chain around them or something, and ash on their bodies, and they're covered totally in ash, quite fearsome looking. Their eyes can often be quite red, horrible. But Prabhupada said, don't look them in the eye. Except they can hypnotize you. So they are the ones that get the first bath, and they enforce it with those tridents. And even the Indian army, who was there trying to keep order, would never oppose the Nagarajas. Very fiercely. So that was what was going on. They were bathing. Now, in that hierarchy, imagine where we were, a bunch of white people who hardly knew anything about Sanatana Dharma. We just quickly trying to get up the learning curve. But we were having nothing of it, especially this crowd of illustrious and energetic Swamis. So we formed a Sankirtan party. We had about, I would say, six Madangas, probably 10, 12 kartals, and we set a roaring beer ton, and Guru Kriya just said, "Charge!" And we just ran straight into the crowd without any hesitation, without any consideration of what would happen. And everyone was so shocked, the crowd just parted. Even the Nagavadas were so shocked that they just stood aside. And we charged right through for about a quarter of a mile down to the beach. Threw the drums and the kartals and our clothes down to Gumcha and jumped into the sunrise. So, just a footnote. The story of the footnote. Now, if you would have been elaborate, Srila Prabhupada was quite quickly, he was already ill, as I mentioned. And the sand in their sleeping, this was a kind of cold, moist weather that just bites to your bone. There's no way you could get warm. And of course, we were young, but still, we weren't really getting sleep. We were getting rested. We were cold.
I never took off that orange coat.
He was suffering in cold, and that really exasperated his own physical ailment, which was, of course, this was the precursor to his eventual departure from his body. The same disease continued, the same, array of diseases, array of problems. And so he needed to be evacuated from Kumbh, and that's really quite an impossible and unthinkable task, because there's no way out. You just can't get out. A million people a day arriving. A million people a day. And already there must have been 6 or 8 million there. And as those were arriving, there were also those trying to depart. So the way it worked, of course, in those days in India, you didn't have cars and Uber or anything like that. You took the train. Prabhupada did have one of his cars there, but it was a very, very long journey to go out. It was impossible to move the car. So when you went to the train station, there were big encampments defined by bamboo fencing that had been set up very quickly by the army. And each one of those encampments had a symbol on it, like a baby cow nursing on the mother, or an elephant, or something. And the village people who were there were all illiterate. They understood that this meant, okay, this group is going to Uttar Pradesh, or someplace in north of Pradesh. This group is going, to the Punjab. This group. So they were camped and waiting for a train. And there was no question of reservations also. So when the train pulled in, it wouldn't stop because it would be a riot immediately, people trying to get on the train. The police were there with their rifles fighting off the crowd. And the train would just slowly move to the station. By the time it got out of the station, it was packed full from on the roof all the way through. Even in between the cars, people were holding on like ants trying to get out of the mail. Now, how are we going to get Prabhupada out? So, there was always some amazing... So, we had a relationship with... his name was R.N. Gupta, in case this evidence recorded. And he was the additional chief mechanical engineer of the Central Railway of India. Which is like being a general in the army, because the railway is a government enterprise, and it makes India run, right? India runs on the wheels of the Indian Railway. And it's the largest railway system in the world, the largest employer in the world. It's a monstrous organization. But this person was very smitten by Srila Prabhupada, and when asked, he immediately arranged a special... I was sent to do that. I didn't know the details, but it's too much. But he arranged a special bogie. It was called a bogie, which is a train car, which actually was impossible to get, but he had it locked up with armed guards on it and brought all the way from Bombay into the Kumbh Mela to put Prabhupada on board and Prabhupada's party to evacuate. So the train came into the station, and again, it didn't stop. And I'll turn it over to Shruti in a minute on this point. But I started with a few other devotees throwing Prabhupada's baggage into the car and pushing devotees up, get in, because it was about 20 of us in the car, 15 or 20. But the train kept rolling. So how were we going to get Prabhupada, who was elderly and definitely feeling his age, how were we going to get him on this rolling car? And all the while, the army was absolutely frightened of the crowd. The crowd was surging, waiting to swamp this new car that had come in empty. And the army was like with their guns and pushing back people. And so we had to get Prabhupada from the car, which we had fought our way through the crowd, put Prabhupada in the car, and brought him up to the train station. How are we going to do that? So here comes Sri Rupa to the rescue.
Interesting how we have different vignettes in memory for what he was doing, what I was doing. But you know, there was on the running team, so she had Aniruddha, there were, you know, all the people that he mentioned, sannyasis were getting on Prajumna, Pulitha, myself, around. And so I remember when everybody finally got on, this is a part that was only us, there wasn't anyone else in this car, the devotee. There was Prajumna still on the, platform, and about 20 trunks. And all these trunks were books. So that's 10 trunks. So here we are, trying to get the trunks on, and the train's leaving, so the devotees are there pulling the emergency. Emergency, we're getting another trunk on, and the train's pulling, and then they're pulling the emergency. This is quite comical sometimes, with stressful, to say the least. And we were, you know, pushing, shoving each other on. The biggest thing is we're doing these books, many of you are aware of doing them. That's how it went. So we probably all got on, and it turned out to be one of my sweetest memories, because it was evening time. It was towards the end of the day, I knew evening, and we finally all went out, and we went into our own little rooms, and I had a sleeping bag with me because we were staying in tents, and so I actually gave Prabhupada my sleeping bag, and we put it on his bunk. Stop. We did that about 6 times.
She did that.
My idea.
The army and the police were guarded, they were absolutely just flipping. They knew for sure there was going to be a stampede and, you know, death and, you know, everything else. So that's when that moment when the train screeched to a halt. And all the police came running. And that's when I took Prabhupada, swooped Prabhupada up, and I carried him up into the train, put him down on her sleeping bag on the bunk. As soon as she let go of the cord, the train began.
Yeah, we had to pull it more times because I heard him get his pumps. And so I think Felipe and I were in the, we were in the bunk room right next to Prabhupada. And he was there, so it was just all of us. And then I think at one point, less than an hour or so later, Prabhupada said he wanted hot milk. Where do you get hot milk? So when we pulled into one of the stations, I actually jumped off. I jumped off and I went running and running and running all through there in the train station and found someone in the kitchen, you know, just talking fast and texting. And I actually got milk and I went over to them, running and chasing and pulling the emergency. There was 4 kids in here, I think, running with our buns and hot milk. And he was very, very pleased. Similar story with Jamuna, that happened with her. You all might know that story where she was on the train and Robin told her he wanted some hot rice. And so, the thing is, when Prabhupada wanted something, you didn't ask
why, how, where. He did it. And that was a part of that, that you gave everything. You didn't think, you didn't blink, you just made it happen. And so, yeah, Robert won hot milk, train was moving slow, I jumped off, ran, they pulled emergencies, I come back with hot milk. So, Juno Crawford told Juno that he wanted hot rice. So she went down to the dining bar and they're like, oh, no, madam, no, get out, no, you cannot. And then Juno went and looked for the conductor. She found the conductor, no, madam, no, can't do it. Juno looked at him and was very serious. She said, if you do not let me make rice from my guru Maharaj, I'm going to jump off this train and kill myself. He took it very seriously. He freaked. He immediately took her down to the dining bar and told them, and then she made him clean, scrub the whole thing. And scrub the counter, pot, everything. And she did the rice. And I think Koshaya was helping her. So she and Koshaya went to Prabhupada's car. She came in with the pot, plate, hot rice. She came and sat down and said, oh, my God, I'm so fortunate. She succeeded. You know, there was, she didn't come with an excuse. She didn't say, oh, I tried, it couldn't work, I couldn't figure it out. That wasn't an option. And the fact that she said, if you don't let me, I will jump, she was very serious. And that's the Christian magic that was always taking place. Somewhere or other, when you were in Prabhupada's company, in Prabhupada's service. It's like, obviously, Krishna, that these things, you know, were allowed to take place, and we were allowed to be a part of that. And witnessing that, I think, is probably the biggest impact on anyone that was able to be in Prabhupada, by seeing him in class, or seeing him in the airport. It didn't matter if you were there day after day, or just that one moment in time. It would have the effect to change all of our lives and our hearts in that 1 second. And observing a pure devotee, because everything he did led towards pure devotional service. No matter what, whether he was feeding or showing you how to do this or talking to anyone, that was the takeaway. So in that, he taught by his example, he taught by the way he lived. And I was watching just 2 days ago on Guru Rani, you know, passing, and I realized, this is what Prabhupada taught us. So he prepared us for this all these years. When we were living in London, Prabhupada was showing us how to die. And he was going through motions with us, you know, to show us, and he just kept insisting over and over and over. He said it didn't matter where he was. He didn't have to go back to the valley. He didn't have to sit. He said, wherever they're chanting, it's Vaikuntha Puri. And he said, wherever he is, it just needs to be glorious. And so I watched how his devotees, and how I see, no matter what the relations are or where one is, devotees step up. They step up when it comes to this, and they all jump in. They're all there. They greet. They chant. They sing. They serve. They take care of things. They doctor. They do this. Devotees always seem to step up. And that's what Prabhupada taught us. And that's the great fortune that we have, that actually taught us not only how to live, how to serve, but taught us how to go.
Now from Kumbh Mela, we went straight to Calcutta. We stayed there for some days. And from Calcutta we went on to Bhubaneswar. And all this time, we both traveled with Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada continued to serve. And as a book of the noise, we was there on and off, during that period. I noted here a conversation I was having with Srila Prabhupada in his room in Calcutta, where we had talked a bit about married life, and I'll just briefly mention only one part of that. Srila Prabhupada says that you should not expect it to go good. If you want to keep a cow, you must accept so much difficulty. If you want to get milk, so much paraphernalia is required. Sometimes, even still, I lament that I was very unkind to my wife. The brother said she was very intolerant, I must admit. But I have a very haughty temper. What can be done? So, interesting point that sometimes the problem was portrayed as by neophyte devotees as being, what is that, tea leaf sort of graves and just cold heartedly walked out. But actually, he admitted to me, he said, to this day, I still lament how harsh I was, which are the words I recall here. So, he was soft hearted and felt lamentation, was self critical. Wasn't that what you call some people sociopathic? He was always analytical of his actions and self critical, analyzed what he had done, considered it from different angles. That I noticed in his private mushrooms in his room. People sometimes say things like this. Another time in this Calcutta period, between Rumbha Mela and Bhubaneswar, I was in the room alone with him again. And he came out of his bathroom, just me sitting there. He wasn't conversing so much to me as just talking out loud, really, to partly to himself and partly to whomever was there to listen. He was speaking in a little surprised tone. He said, actually, in my entire life, I cannot think of a time when I was not thinking of Krishna. He was a little himself, saying in a surprised tone. And I found that, for me, it was a very moving and convincing statement. Not that he was making any effort to convince me, I was already a fanatic. That was how he would like to convince. But I think he was just expressing a thought that was in his own mind, and he was himself finding it interesting.
Just speaking of how Prabhupada would speak sometime in his room, I just got off his evening meal and stepped away to where I was staying, actually. I was in Ramarati's apartment there in the building in Vrindavan, and her veranda overlooked Prabhupada's group, and we could hear him. And we would creep down behind the jelly work, and we could hear his conversation. And that one night he was sitting there and he said, I'm very fortunate. The two most dear people in all the world, the two most kindest people in all the world are very dear to me. He said, my father and my guru Maharaj. He said, but if it wasn't for my mother, he said, I wouldn't be the great man that I am today. Said his mother was very, very strict, and his father was very, very kind. It was just an evening conversation and talking. And there were more things, but that kind of brings the point, but again, of just giving a slice of the human side of Prabhupada. We all know him as acharya, guru, and author, but he had great sense of humor. He had great personal ability to interface. He could talk on any subject. Sometimes we would be shocked things that he would know about anything. When I gave him sunglasses once, he knew the manufacturer and said he sold them in his shop in Allahabad.
Yes, he told me, I said, Prabhupada, they change color as the light increases. And you said Zeus.
There are Zeus lenses. I didn't know Zeus lenses.
He said, I used to sell them in my pharmaceutical in Alaba. And the word was done. And he knew.
In a similar kind of vein, we had a devotee, life member / devotee, became initiated as Rasa Purnandas. Lived in Power on the other side of the river from Prabhupada. And he was a metallurgist by training. And I used to export, in those days, all of the Madhavas and all of the Karthos and all of the Dodis and all of this town worldwide came from Prabhupada. And I would export them to different devotees to business called Spiritual Society and help support the business government in Minnesota. And so I was very keen to have always the best. I remember we used to get a powdered blue Madanga from Satish Chandra, who was the renowned finest Madanga maker in the universe down at the Kali Temple. And I remember getting extremely angry when he raised the price from 35 rupees to 50 rupees. I was very upset. So we were shipping out hundreds of drums at that time. The movement was emerging. So in talking one day with Rasapurna Prabhu, and knowing that he's a metallurgist, I said, you know, what about making really good kartals? And he said, yeah, these kartals are not correct at all. They're made in a press. They should be hammered and folded and hammered like Damascus steel. This is how they were traditionally made. And there's a certain mixture of six or seven metals, I think it's not the Indian ones. There was a special mixture that he knew of from the old writings. And so I said, well, let's do this. Let's make some. And so we did. We made a dozen of them. And this is one of them right here. Shooting this name is right on it. So the process of folding the metal like 100 times when it's white hot and hammering it back down, and then the kartal itself, if you look at these kartals, you'll see they're very irregular because they're hammered into shape, they're not cast. Right? And what happens is the metal, the molecules in metal, gets twisted and tensioned, which makes it extraordinarily strong, and it gets a ring in it, which is unmistakable. Right? If you listen closely, the ring continues for a long, long time.
How about yourself?
We'll talk after. So, Srila Prabhupada came to the Vyasasan in Calcutta, offered his obeisances in front of the traditional reading in the morning and just to get a class. And he climbed up on the Vyasasan, and I was standing as the teepee next to him, and put his hand out for the kartals to sing the Jai Ram Madhava. Without ever mentioning anything about this to him, I put those kartals in his hand and he played them. And at the end of Jai Ram Madhava, and Jai Ram Vishnupada, who was a people, at the end of the Jai Ram prayers, he turned to me and he said, who would have seen these kartals? So we had this consciousness, awareness, which was startling to us. I mean, it may sound, I don't know, it depends how you hear it, but it may sound somewhat ordinary. It was extraordinary. Always shocking how we were so brightly aware of the smallest details, again and again, everything he knows.
Noticed in the food, the taste, that anything he knew. I mean, once Jamuna had made this, heard this name, this Pishivahor, it was this flower from Pishivahor. She learned how to make these chapati, these rojis from the Radharaman temple. They would get these grains from Pishivahor, and they would grind it fresh for Radharaman every day. So when she learned how to make these
She was very eager to share this and offer this to Prabhupada. He had come, she didn't say a word, and she made them, she put them down, he took one bite, and he said, oh, you've made roti from fishing before. He said, and you've cooked them on cow dung. He said, but if you would have left it one or two more seconds, he said, they would be perfect. He not only knew, and he also said, and you grounded in the last 3 hours. He said, you have made from Vishi Lahore, and you grounded in the last 3 hours. He said, if you would just leave it one or two more seconds, it would be perfect. He not only knew where it was from, he knew how long it was ground, and he knew exactly what would make it perfect. This wasn't just a side thing, this was everything. He knew the glasses, the sunglasses. He knew the garments. He knew this, that. I made it when he came to Miami. My two favorite oranges during that January, February was Mineola, the honey bells, and what was his name? It was the name of the man that kind of came in green. Murpok. So I got the Murpok, and they were my favorites, so I combined them. So Trinity was there as his Prabhupada's servant, so I was eager to give Prabhupada this special orange juice that I love. So as I gave it to Trinity, Prabhupada immediately commented and wanted to know everything about the orange juice. And that's what it was. And the jeweler said the story once here in Vrindavan, they made him orange, they brought him orange, and said, so then they went to Mathura, they brought the orange, they wanted to go, they went all the way to Agra to get orange. Because they were so bad. They brought that to third class. And they immediately
felt. This is a very important aspect to bond from the Brahman, that his standards were so high. And he held himself even to higher standards, as we all know. He drove himself so hard to translate, to travel, to speak, to preach, to counsel, answer every letter. There was never a letter allowed from him that was not answered within a short period of time. 2 days, 3 days max. That would have been unusual in his long history. Every single letter in person answered and person signed. And I was doing his banking quite a bit in Calcutta and different places in Dublin, sending me banking chores. And he sent me a couple of times to downtown Vrindavan to the bank to debate with the bank manager, because technically they were supposed to give interest to the second decimal point, but they were conveniently rounding it in their favor to the first decimal point. And the bank manager was beside himself. Why do you care? We're talking about 12 rupees. It was the principle. He was very precise in everything that he did. And that was, for us, that was a constant presence. It was a constant challenge. I'm sure that those of you who do have interaction with the stories of Prabhupada, well aware of this, Prabhupada will be very aware on the artistic side. Under many other standards, perhaps, you could invite us to, but this was a constant experience in being with your partner, that you were always on your toes, and you never knew which way the room was going to shift. It was always surprising, but it was, as you look at it, there was a continuity, there was a consistency, it wasn't chaos. It was clearly in the same line. But, to be enlightened to that standard of excellence was always challenging and quite surprising for us to see how he viewed things.
If you got comfortable, you really not. Always had to be on that raw edge and aware that every second, as soon as you make it proud, puffed up, comfortable, you're gone. You're gone. And Prabhupada didn't like to change. He liked the continuity. He liked the consistency. He liked one there because it meant the inconvenience to him when they knew what had to come in, because then every day would change. You'd have to train the cooking, you'd have to train the service, you'd have to translating would be off, the sleep would be off, everything. So he really, really disliked it. And he liked that one would stay, but he said his Westerner can always rest. Westerner so rested. And he even once said to, I think it was a mentor, that when he was sick, Bob would say, you do not have the right to be sick. And someone might think that sounds harsh, or what does that mean? But it meant that you were going to inconvenience his service. Because if he was sick, then this whole routine day and schedule would be thrown off. And that was clearly pointed out. Sickness came from, you know, irregular or eating or sleeping, something. So that was also very important. But he once said to me in Bhuvaneshwar, when Bhuva was sick and I was cooking, he said, you make very nice duplicate of Bhuva. And what he was meaning by that he didn't feel any difference, whether she was there or I was there. And so it was important to him because it didn't impact him. It was seamless. And when a new one would come in, it would create chaos, it would create a problem. So that's what he said. You make very nice duplicate. He was happy in that way. She was there the day before, then I was there the next. He was there, and then I was there the next. He couldn't help it.
This intensity, my standard, should be understood in the context that Srila Prabhupada was multitasking on a scale that's hardly imaginable. He was, in one day, simultaneously managing affairs, quite significant issues on a worldwide scale. And, you know, even within the context of just Calcutta Temple, I'm noting here, in one day, Srila Prabhupada interacted with me on obtaining the balance of the flats and 3CL road, and bidding Sail Bajuria to intervene in the negotiation. He was a wealthy man that was well known to Shri for myself. He was dealing with philosophical deviations that were occurring in a certain conversation. He was dealing that day with over 30 letters, responding on 30 different issues. He was translating in a very intense translation in the evenings, if you know. He was dealing in Calcutta with a lot of local issues. People would come. Srila Prabhupada was a elder in the community of the Bengalis. There were some kind of Bengalis at Calcutta. And the tradition in India, I'm sure all older cultures, is that elders are highly regarded, and if there's disputes, we don't immediately go and lawyer up as it is and go to court, but we go to an elder and ask him to arbitrate. That's the tradition. So there were even family disputes brought to Srila Prabhupada, always present on the observances. People came to him, and one side would explain their point of view, the other side would explain their point of view, Prabhupada would listen, and then he would give a suggestion on it. Cut the baby in half, so to speak, as Solomon, wise Solomon advised. And people would walk out absolutely happy. The decision had been made, and it was a binding decision. So he was multitasking on small petty issues, apparently petty issues, on local issues where he was, and on international issues. And he was translating. That translation alone was done at a speed and at a depth which is never seen. You describe to any author, any professional author, the pace that he translated and the depth of the translation work, they'll all tell you it's impossible. It can't be done. But he was heavily engaged in that, which is why Varuna was always... Why was Varuna dragging trunks and bags and big books and... What was the point of that? this prophet was referencing all those books. And they were all being distilled down. All being distilled down into the Bhagavad Gita books. It was all going on at the same time. So the piece he had set himself to was otherworldly. So yes, traveling with Prabhupada was very demanding, and being corrected was very demanding, and the standards were very demanding, because he demanded so much of himself. We know he didn't sleep practically for a few hours. I observed often, because I would attend him when he slept, that he hardly rested. He just closed his eyes, put his hands across his chest, slightly, one hand over the other. And he just, I never saw his jaw go, or snore. It was just like someone just resting their eyes. And then, within an hour and a half or 2 hours, I would be sitting chanting quietly. And the bees waiting for me there. He would just open his eyes and immediately start talking. I never saw him wake up and, you know, clear his eyes, where am I? And many times he would not even, before he opened his eyes, he would just start talking absolutely lucidly, connected to something that, in context, that had just happened or happened perhaps the day before, and he would immediately start talking and then go home from there. So, he pushed himself to a level that's hardly known. Perhaps in history we can find some examples of people that pushed something like this, but it was extraordinary. And so the standards he kept, and then those who were in his party were relentlessly pushed as well to meet certain expectations. And it was, he couldn't help it. I actually made a note that once he commented, and he said, I lament that I have to push, I have to use such harsh words to push you. He said, I lament it. He said, but what can I do? What else can I say? So, just carrying on from what you mentioned there. So in now we're still in January, and we moved on to Bhubaneswar on the 20th. On the 19th we traveled and arrived in Bhubaneswar. And Srila Prabhupada moved into the huts. Now at this time the Bhubaneswar temple was far out in the farming fields and really a long way from the little town of Bhubaneswar. I think it would take half an hour on the rickshaw to get into what was then the town of Bhubaneswar. The city of Bhubaneswar has grown and engulfed the temple. At that time it was in farming fields and the huts were mud huts or straw roofs, conditional local style. And Prabhupada was sleeping on a charpoy, which is a, you know, the wooden frame with a gold strung between it, that type of cot. And it was hot. Although we're in January, it was southern, getting towards southern India, and it was warm. And I remember Prabhupada being constantly without a kurta. He was just wearing his lungi, sannyas, silk cloth. And he taught us once we came in. Yeah, he was swimming for a little radiant cloth. He was wearing the riksha. But he was clearly very happy to be in anywhere. He really liked being in a simple countryside. That was always his favorite place. And he expressed that in different ways. He was very happy to be there. And you were working on that time? Is that in the next episode? So Prabhupada, even then, he was dealing with the local affairs, of course. We had a big discussion, Jayadataka Swami, Bhavananda Rameshwar, Gargamuni, I was there also. We were discussing whether a temple should be built here, a large temple in Yerushalayim, or whether it should be built at Puri. So Prabhupada, then he came with the opinion, I think that a small temple should be built here, and a very large temple in Yerushalayim should be built at Puri. So he dispatched me to go to Puri, 2 days later, on the 21st of January, to see the defense minister of India, who was from Puri, who was from the Bhubaneswar and Puri area, and he was visiting his home turf. His name was Patnaik, Biju Patnaik, and he's still sort of a legendary, this is long gone, but he was a legendary politician. His son remains as the chief minister of that state. So Prabhupada had some acquaintance with him, as he did all over the country. There were quite senior people in government and in business that were very, very respectful of Srila Prabhupada. The governor of Tamil Nadu came regularly, owners of newspapers, industrialists, bureaus, all different types of people of influence came to see him. So Prabhupada sent me to see the defense minister of India. And I went there on Prabhupada's instructions with a piece of land they were offering us, which Prabhupada later rejected. It was important. And so constantly it was like a general, constantly multitasking, meeting people. Yeah, you got upset with me a little bit. In the process, which we had talked about building a very big temple, that group I mentioned, talking to Prabhupada. So I'm talking to Biju Patnaik. I mentioned that we want to build a temple bigger than the Jagannath temple, or bigger. And when I came back, Prabhupada debriefed me. He wanted to know everything that had transpired. And when I said that, Prabhupada said, "Well, foolish, you don't know politics." Obviously, that would have been a little bit of a disruptive idea in Puri to challenge the preeminence of the Jagannath temple. Of course, it never happened. Never occurred.
Just a little story, so I know the people in Ishbar. So, those meetings were taking place, and I would come in and out of Prabhupada's rooms to give his medicine or ask him something about lunch. And so when I walked in this one day, I heard Garbhamuni very happily and quite pleased with himself telling Prabhupada how his cook, Garbhamuni, had his own private cook, Shantilal. And so he was telling Prabhupada how Shantilal makes these wonderful pulkas. Pulkas are quite large, bigger than 8-inch with chapatis, different areas of the wood in Prabhupada. Do you call them pulkas? So he was telling Prabhupada, "Oh, Prabhupada, you should have Chantilal's bulbas. They're like this." And all of a sudden my ears caught, and Prabhupada looked and said, "She can do it." But the curious thing is, I know my limits, and I know what I can do and what I can't. And so I would make the dough, and I would call Chantilal to come into my kitchen, and Chantilal would roll my chapatis for Prabhupada. So I felt a little guilty when I came in and I heard this conversation. Prabhupada said, "She can do it. He knows how to do." So the curious thing was, Shantilal came in early one day, and I had a kitchen probably the size of that stone there, but a little smaller. And it was, I had 2 mud piled up with wood burning and no window. I don't know if you've been in a situation where you're burning wood and you have no window. There's an awful lot of smoke. And so, numerous stories came out of this, but I would always keep a clean sari in there, and I would cook because I'd be black and sooty, and then before I'd go in, I would change real quick, close the door, put on fresh tilak, and I would go in fresh. And again, I'm giving you my vata here, because I keep giving antidotes. So, to give you an idea, Palika, she would wear her worst saris to cook, and she'd go in ragged, look like she was, you know, with the monkey bottle. She just went in all dirty, and one day Prabhupada looked at her and he said, "You need new sari?" She's like, "No, Prabhupada." And she had good saris back in her room. And I said, She looks horrible. He said, you deem yourself? She said, no, Robert, I have. He said, your husband's taking sannyas. I will take care of you. I'm sorry. He said, no, Robert, I have. So me, therefore, I went to Puri, and I picked up a very typical arisen, white and red. So I was all sooty and black, and then I changed real quick, put on my new sari, and walked in. She was probably looking at me, and he said, you have new sari? And I was quite pleased. I said, yes, she was Prabhupada. And I said, it's typical of this. I just bought it yesterday in Puri. He said, it is very nice. He said, my mother used to wear just like this. And it was white and red. I needed to go back to Puri, bought another one, and I think I held that one on the wall forever. I still have it, actually. But back to my original story about Shanti Lal. So Shanti Lal comes in, and he sees me making the dough, and he thinks about me to put yogurt in the dough. So I was putting the yogurt, and he's like, no. I'm like, Shanti Lal, take a minute. And so he sees me, and I said, Shanti Lal, you go outside, I'll call you when I'm ready. And he went outside, so I'm in there, and I start kneading the dough, and this is when I would pray. And I was that specific day, I was just kneading, and the tears were coming down my eyes, and I was praying to Prabhupada. So many things. And to be near, I never asked for anything except to serve them, to be with them. It was more like this. And so then I called Shanti Lal, please Shanti Lal come. So he rolls them, and at this point, Prabhupada's not digging any deep. He's not well. So I'm making everything about eating. I'm not really eating so much. And this is actually evening time, actually. I got confused. This wasn't lunch. This was evening time. So I brought in one chapati, two chapati, three chapati, four. And then he never ate that many. And two, three, finished. And he was on the fourth, fifth, and he looked up and asked him. I would come in a couple times during this, and his eyes would be closed. Prabhupada didn't eat and talk. Prabhupada ate in silence. He didn't eat, he relished. When you watch Prabhupada eat, his eyes would be closed, and he would take up to 45 minutes just to eat his meal. And he always ate alone. So when I came in numerous times, his eyes were closed, and he was chewing the chapati in his head, and you could see he was relished. And I could feel that he was tasting. When I saw him do that, I could feel he was tasting. This is what I was putting into the chapati. So when he asked me for another, I kind of stopped in my tracks and I stared at him. It was almost like a mother looking, you know. So when he said, bring me another, I looked at him like, no. And I stared at him and didn't move. And he looked at me and he started to laugh. And he said, do not worry, he is already digested. So that was, again, just a part of his endearing personality, his kindness, and his reciprocation. I could feel his reciprocation with his prayer. So this was happening like the day before. So when I walked in and Garbha Muni was going on and on about how Shanti Lal makes it skolkas and Prabhupada needs to eat Shanti Lal skolkas, and I'm like, uh-oh, I'm going to be exposed here. But Garbha said, no, she can do it. So that was my little chapati story and the fish fire and me wanting to tell Prabhupada, no, you can't have another. Already so many chapati. You're not supposed to be eating this anymore. And start laughing. You can read my mind.
On the 4th of February, I know that I think we're coming here for me. One story. Remembering Sri Prabhupada's comment to me, how we still lamented Arshi of his wife. And I was always interacting with his family members and his Prabhupada TV, especially with Bhavan and Ali Mohanbe. I had a bit of an instinct, I could say, for Prabhupada's sympathetic or empathetic feeling towards him. At the same time, I knew that Srila Prabhupada, he never really considered ISKCON or ISKCON money to be his. It was very obvious how he dealt with things. He considered it to be the mission of his spiritual master, and he was just serving that mission. Was a carry on, carry forward the instruction of his spiritual master. So I don't know how it came to me, it just struck me that I should blurt this out. And I said, Srila Prabhupada, you are an author, and the royalties belong to you. And a little surprise for a second. And I said, and if you want, you can leave some money for it, because by this point he was already speaking regularly about leaving. I said, if you want, you can leave something for your family. I said, it's not his kind of money, it's your money. He stopped for a moment, and he was actually, I think, a little taken aback. He thought of it. He said, how much should I leave? I said, it depends on your objective. What is your objective? So I simply want that they should not starve. As you know, there's a tendency amongst gurus that the family members all sort of jump on the, you know, onto the gravy train, so to speak, and enjoy fame and finances. Prabhupada did not want that. He encouraged his boys to sell his books. He gave the books at the discounts. They could sell what they wanted. He did give them a flat to them. But he wanted them to stand on their own and stand separate in this town, not to be family property. So I suggested an amount, which at the time was 1,000 rupees a month per family member, and the ruby was 10 times more valuable than it is today, exactly 10 times. The ruby's trading a little above 70 today, it was trading at 7 at that time. And so it was a, you know, middle class income. My objective in setting that number was a number where they never would think about starvation or being anxiety. They would not have anything extra, but they would never be in trouble. So that was the number set. And before he agreed to that, he asked Mal's opinion, which I won't say. He never did such things independently. He always asked other people's opinion, other devotees' opinions. And he really felt himself to be part of the team. Although he was the leader of the team, he was very conscious that he was also Krishna's servant. And then the next day, 15th February, Srila Prabhupada went to Sial Bhajuria's house. Sial Bhajuria was, at that time, he was known to have more black money, which means unaccounted money, untaxed money. In India, it accounted for probably 60% plus of all the money in India. It was off the books, taxes weren't paid. And this comes from a long tradition of being colonized by hostile forces who you don't want to give your money to. So they had developed over 1,000 years of colonization, almost a genetic methodology of hiding money. And Sial Bhajuria was known to be the man in India with the most black money of anyone. And he was very fond of Sri Rupa and a little bit fond of me. And we used to stay and live in his guest house sometime when we were being temple present, a very palatial place. So Srila Prabhupada came there. 5th of February, she would be in here in Thurwood. It's in Alipur, which is part of Calcutta. It's from the posh neighborhood of Calcutta.
Alipur.
No, it was something else. But it is right across from the Alipur Botanical Garden. Right across the street. So Prabhupada arrived at 6 in the morning, 6 a.m., according to my notes. And Sial Bhajuria came down and did all of the standard Hindu, you know, touching the feet, giving some offerings, and he gave Srila Prabhupada 5,000 rupees, which at that time was 50,000 rupees. $1,000 or something like that. And not only was it that, but it was had a huge buying power. One rupee in those days you could eat very nicely in the marketplace, into a little stall or something, fully satisfy yourself. So it was a significant donation, not, you know, earth shaking or wasn't going to change the whole game, but it was respectful. And so then the next day, on the 6th of February, Srila Prabhupada visited Panipati. And there he had discussions with the MLA, the member of legislative assembly, who was sort of the local power person in that region, about us getting a temple, a land temple there. And we had Jirat Nandoya for us at Panipati. So Srila Prabhupada then went to Mayapur the next day. And on the 8th of February, he had a morning walk, as he always did. And Srila Prabhupada was on this walk, you know, just asked her if she'll tell us what happened.
He was late for how long we should go and didn't have any questions.
It was 10 minutes to the, it was 10 minutes until we were on the
question. Okay, 10 minutes. 8:15. You want to tell us what?
Morning walk.
Srila Prabhupada. Seal the journey.
Everybody knows that story. No, not everybody. Not everybody. It's for sure. Never. Nobody.
Okay. I don't know the story.
You don't know the story? Well, at that time, there was only the one building in Mayapur, so now they had just finished a long building. The Prabhupada hadn't toured that building yet. So this specific morning walk, Prabhupada was going to go tour the long, the new building. It's called the Long Building. That's the second one. So all the ladies were up on the second floor looking at everybody arrive, you know, getting ready to go on the walk. And I said, no, are we going? And they're like, no, ladies are not allowed to go on the morning walk. And I'm like, why? I'm like, that's the rule. And I'm like, well, I'm going. And they're like, okay. So I decided to go get my camera back in my room. And I rationalized, I'm going to play the Shaka today. The Shaka wasn't there. And I thought, in my mind, I thought, I think, well, I'll send the picture to PGQ. I'm not doing anything wrong. So I went scurrying, running. By the time I got there, everybody just saw saffron and sticks. The whole was like a ocean. When I walked into that building, you thought that I just hit a brick wall. First person with me was nothing to talk to me that night, and I just so happened to turn, and I bumped into the group. And I was so dumb. And the looks I was getting was enough to, you know.
This is called a group of mean songs.
So, but just so happened, Prabhupada saw me out of the corner of his eye. And who did he talk to? He called to me. He was like a mirror to maybe, Roy. Prabhupada was about from here to there. And he said something to me, and so it was like they parted. And then it was a clear line between Prabhupada. And I can't remember, honestly, what was said at that point, because I was literally shaking from what I felt by coming on the scene. It was like not only unwanted child, but I had viruses. So I'm kind of like, Prabhupada starts to look at me, and then all of a sudden, Prabhupada decides to say enough. So he turns to talk, and so they all open up again. So at this point, I start walking closer. This happened 3 times. They would close. Prabhupada would turn his face up to me and it would open again. So by now I was all the way up to Prabhupada. And so then at this point Prabhupada says, he knew I was building a house out of the Goshala. I just told him when I was in Bombay, and then he apparently heard about it in
MPD was there in 94. I built that, we did the first household that we built, the first apartment in my home. So we built it over the Gochala. So Prabhupada looks at me and he said, so I hear you're building one very nice house at the Gochala. I don't know what I was feeling. I was pretty, you know, spunky that day, and I just spontaneously looked at Prabhupada and said, it will be sure, Prabhupada, if you come. And Prabhupada said, you know, Seattle, Victoria, and I've got this blank look on my face, and Prabhupada's looking right at me, and we're as close as our Ram and I are, and he could see that I'm not following. He said, you know, Seattle, Victoria, and I'm standing there staring, and he goes, you know, one CL Majoria? And I'm kind of going, he says, you do not know CL Majoria? He said, if you not.
She was living in the
house. I was living with CL Majoria. I mean, that's how nervous I was that they had made me feel. And so at that point, when he said it's so strong, I went, oh, yes, you qualified. And he said, then he kind of got a little spunky himself. And he said, you know, he's exaggerating. He said, you know, I stayed 1 minute, and he gave me 5,000 So I leaned in, and I looked at him, and I said, Prabhupada, if you come with 2 minutes, I'll give you 10,000 The Prabhupada's head flew back, and he started laughing. And I just remember seeing behind Prabhupada Satsrupa, and Maharaj was not on the floor. And he was just like, they were all just like staring at me. And Robert, so then Robert looked at me after I said that, and he goes, so you arrange, I will come. And at that point, I couldn't take anymore. So I just turned around and laughed. But that was, so the thing is, she wasn't Prabhupada that said, no, we're going to be. What they all said, and I'm like, okay, why? And so when I go, we probably talk to you. You want to talk to me about the house at the gold shop? So.
Well, I'm sure Robert was very proud of you. He was surprised to invest in his life of the simple. I'm having daughter of the simple. So.
Okay,
so, Judy came to me. This fix that she got himself into.
No, so I took the baby first and said, your wife really put her foot in her mouth today.
So she had some diamond stud earrings that her mother had given her. And she immediately put those off and said, go sell these.
I didn't have them, but I
was a lot of money for us, and we've been living in India.
It was just fun being in conversation. I did not have 10,000 rupees.
So I took her earrings, I didn't know, but I took her earrings and some drums. And I went to Calcutta and sold them. And went to the back alleys in the old-fashioned jewelry shops, you know, where there's no door, it was sitting there on the edge of the alley. And I managed to get, I don't know how we did it, I marked here 3,000 rupees for the earrings. How we accumulated to 10. This is one of the anomalies of my diary of history, but we did manage to get that money. And I'll just close on this one note. So the day we were arranging the fire at the Homa for, you know, being, opening the home and bringing auspiciousness to the apartment, the Prabhupada was planning to come. So, small Vishnumaraj being servant and knowing Prabhupada had now become very ill. He'd become very ill.
It would take you quite a long. It wasn't like the next day, it would probably not be much. Because Prabhupada said, talk to Pradyumna and pick an auspicious day for the open. The Pradyumna needs a certain date.
Right. So, Tamal was arguing that you shouldn't go. And Prabhupada said, no. They have arranged. They're expecting I must go. And then I came over to check, you know, about the coming, and I heard about this, you know, discussion. And so I came into Srila Prabhupada and I said, Srila Prabhupada, there's no requirement for you to go. just give your blessings. Please don't come. That was the last day that Srila Prabhupada, that was, from that point on, his health sunk and he never recovered. It was exactly on that day, the day before he had walked in the morning, and that day he couldn't walk. And so it was from there. This is right near my festival time, 1977. And then there's another history which we won't go into today. But that Srila Prabhupada and myself had a lot of interaction, quite a lot more interaction, actually, in the later part when Srila Prabhupada prepared to leave. Perhaps they will have a chance to share with you also. We both have shared at different times in different mediums. I'm not trying to leave that record. And we're both tasked to write also someday. Those of you who are your friends, please keep on for doing that chore. Thank you very much for giving us an opportunity to relive these stories. They were not given to us, they were given to all of us, and given to us meaning myself and Kudu, but they were given to all of us, and we just happened to be there to observe them, as many others happened to have that fortune. Very kindly shared. And this, Srila Prabhupada belongs to the universe, he belongs to everyone. He is the sum total of all good qualities and the ideal. So that is, that behooves us to share the little aspect of it. Hopefully illuminate more in this dark world than the person was. And you have to understand some of these personality characteristics and this hard pressure you can put on people at times in a particular context of what he was doing. He was a general out to change the world, and he did. He made a major impact on many, many people, and that impact is now that pebble in the pond, those vibrations are expanding, but no. It was because of the hard effort it took over those years. And that's the context of why it was awakened. It was an intensity of things. But there are many, many other things that could be discussed and go over here and discuss. But we appear, I'm sure, a mutual and a collective gratitude for these memories that leave an impression and refresh an impression of that person, the person I love. So.
I'm just going to say, the Prophet said, I can give special mercy to such a people. To everyone. Look, maybe the caretakers of these specific stories, but also relative to you, and that's how they're to be given. That's how they're to be given, is Prabhupada's accessible. And he also he would encourage us to pray to the grandfather, so the grandfather is more merciful than the father. So some of you may have, one that is the father, but also the grandfather.